Welcome to the Language and Literacy Collective podcast, where we share tips and strategies to support language development and encourage a love of literacy in all children. This podcast is hosted by two sisters who share a passion for all things language and literacy. I'm Liz, a speech therapist and behavior analyst.
And I'm Stephanie, a literacy specialist and former classroom teacher. Our goal is to make literacy inclusive and accessible to all by equipping parents and teachers with the tools necessary to best support their kiddos. Now let's get started with today's episode.
All right, so today we have Samantha Sullivan on from Polka Dots and Planning, and we are going to be talking all about dyslexia. So welcome, Samantha.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, we're so excited. So we're just going to jump right in. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself personally and professionally and just kind of how you got to where you are today?
Sure. So I always knew I wanted to be a teacher, like a lot of other teachers, you know, classroom in your house and teacher siblings, cousins, things like that. And then I knew that I wanted to go specifically into special education when I saw my older brother and his struggles with dyslexia. And so I saw what he went through as a student with dyslexia and also what my parents dealt with as far as challenges go for advocating for him, getting him tested, and really kind of navigating just the whole world of special education. So that's how I decided I wanted to focus specifically on those learning differences. So I went to undergrad for elementary and special education, and then got a job in a public school for 6 years, got my master's while I was there in special education. And now I find myself at a school just for kids with language-based learning disabilities. So it led me to a great place. And then in my non-teacher time, I like to travel and spend time with family.
So you're at a school with students with language-based learning difficulties. What are some other things that you see? I know I don't want to get down a rabbit hole, but I'm very interested. So what are some of the other things that you see aside from dyslexia there?
So it's primarily dyslexia, but most of the students have, you know, other needs too, executive functioning issues, or even just speech needs where they need help with articulation or things more specific in that area, attention issues, but primarily dyslexia.
Okay, cool, cool.
One of the reasons Liz and I have really wanted to talk to an expert or an advocate in the field of dyslexia is because I feel like there's a lack of information for parents and for classroom teachers. And maybe that's my experience in New Jersey, but I was a classroom teacher for 8 years, and I honestly don't think it was until like year six that there was mandated dyslexia training for teachers, which to me seems so crazy because there's such a high percentage of children that have some form of dyslexia. I think it's more of like kind of like a spectrum, like you can have severe dyslexia.
Yeah, it can range from, you know, like a mild form of dyslexia to being more severe. And
yeah, so that was a significant portion of the students in my classroom. You know, if there were, you know, 5-6 kids in my room, as a classroom teacher, I had next to zero knowledge on how best to support them, you know, and that's coming from six years of teaching experience and a master's as a literacy specialist, and still felt that I didn't have a ton of information. And then I also had parents coming to me with, is my child dyslexic, based on what I felt were like maybe some like misconceptions. You know, like I think people think certain things about dyslexia that aren't necessarily true. So I'm so excited that you're here today because I feel like there's such a need for dyslexia advocacy. So I guess that kind of leads us to our second question. What is dyslexia?
So I would say in a nutshell, dyslexia is a language-based learning difference, and it can affect reading, spelling, writing, and essentially the student or the person with dyslexia has difficulty with the phonological aspect of our language. So really matching the sounds of our language to those visual representations of our language, the letters or the graphemes. And like you said, I saw the same exact thing when I was in the beginning of my teaching, even through year six of teaching, students who had some sort of learning difference, but I really wasn't that knowledgeable in how to teach these students with dyslexia. And so I'm definitely not an expert on this, but definitely an advocate. And there is so much to learn about this topic. So I'm excited that you guys asked me on here.
What would you say are some characteristics of a dyslexic reader or writer?
So just like a lot of other, you know, disabilities, there's a range of things. So you can see students who are seriously impacted by their dyslexia, and some students who seem to have a more mild case. But some common things that you'll see are, with a reader, it might be a little more laborious for them to read since they do have that difficulty decoding. So their fluency is going to be lacking, or since their fluency is poor, it's going to lead to comprehension difficulties. Something that's also interesting is when you're working with a student with dyslexia, you know, their listening comprehension could be way different than their comprehension when they're actually reading. And then a student who's writing is just a crazy process in general and requires so much. So our students with dyslexia, they are working with their decoding while they're trying to write and putting those words on the paper, which can be another really labor-intensive task. So it can take them longer to do that. Also, as far as like executive functioning skills, the planning, the organization, initiating and sustaining the task, those can all come into play too.
I don't even know if this comes from my education or if this comes from like childhood, where when you think of a reader with dyslexia, or I guess even a writer with dyslexia, I feel like it's been ingrained in me like, oh, well, a common challenge that they have is with reversing the word. You know, they may read and a cat, like cat may come out tack. Is that even a thing, or is that common, or is that one of the misconceptions about dyslexia?
So that's definitely a misconception. Okay. One of the first things some people think of, like you said, is, you know, flipping your letters or letter reversals. But students with dyslexia, they don't have a vision problem. It's, you know, connected to that part of your brain that deals with language. And so they have trouble with that phonological processing and that awareness that sounds make up words, and these sounds can be taken apart and put together. And so when they are struggling to say a word and they may mix up the phonemes or the sounds, that's their difficulty decoding the word and blending those sounds together. So a misconception.
Gotcha. Okay. So then what are some of the other misconceptions surrounding dyslexia?
One that I really like to point out a lot is that there's not a connection to intelligence and dyslexia. You know, students with dyslexia are capable of the same things. They, you know, it doesn't mean they have a lower IQ. There are so many people who have dyslexia who are successful. Another thing is that I saw it a lot with, you know, my brother. A lot of people just thought he was lazy, or that someone with dyslexia, maybe before they're identified or even after they're identified, they just need to put forth more effort. But in reality, it's that their brain is wired to process language a different way, and they need to be taught with explicit instruction. And it's definitely not laziness.
Right.
So there's a lot, and the research on it's really amazing and really interesting to look into. But I think those are the big ones. Oh, wait, I thought of another one.
Oh, good. What is it?
dyslexia can't be identified early. I know that a lot of students, when I was in the general education setting, trying to get a student referred to the testing process could be difficult. And a lot of times I was told this child's too young. And early intervention is key. We know that. So I don't know why, as educators and as administrators, we're not, you know, looking deeper into what's going on with our children and their learning early on so that we can intervene correctly, and then, you know, prevent the meltdowns and the gaps as they get on and further in school. So it can be identified early on.
So with all that being said, what are some strategies parents and teachers can do to help students who may be dyslexic?
So one thing that I think is a huge component of a student's success is helping them gain self-advocacy skills. Even as a student without dyslexia, I found that knowing my learning style and knowing what worked for me made me more successful. And so students at our school, they know what dyslexia is. They know what it means. They know how it impacts their learning. And they also know that they have a responsibility to speak up for themselves, and that when they leave our school, they're probably going to experience teachers who don't have the knowledge that our teachers have, or that don't know how to accommodate for their needs. And so they need to learn how to speak up and be comfortable speaking up. So I think that's huge, just teaching them about dyslexia and working on those advocacy skills. And then obviously the instruction is key. In students with dyslexia, there is research-based practices about what works. And so those need to be put in place, and it needs to be consistent. And I think that as a parent, it just doing all the reading and the research that you can, you know, I think it's difficult for a lot of parents to know what their rights are as far as getting testing done for a student and the special education process. And so the more knowledgeable you are about it, the easier it's going to be. And then, you know, there's tons of resources that you can reach out to. So I think, you know, the early intervention, making sure you've got that approach that's appropriate, and then the self-advocacy is huge.
I love that. I actually just was talking with another professional on Instagram Live about advocacy, and just how important it is for parents to know their rights in that area. So mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. And sorry if I missed it, but what is your actual title? You're not a reading specialist. What is your actual title?
No. So at our school, our students have other core classes. And then in addition to their regular language class, they have what's called tutoring. But it's not tutoring as in like, let me help you get ready for a test. It's individualized reading and writing instruction. So I am technically a tutor is what they call it at our school.
Okay. But your degree is a special education degree. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have another question. So then Steph, you can ask your question. Do you have speech therapists that you collaborate with? Because I know there's a lot of like overlap. And we actually were on SLP Nerdcast a couple of months ago talking about just what Stephanie mentioned with phonemic awareness and kind of some of those things to look out for in terms of early language disorders, then kind of resulting in some more literacy-based disorders. So that's something that, you know, the speech therapist can be involved in kind of from maybe potentially an earlier age of the child, because it may present initially as, you know, a language disorder and then kind of evolve into more of a literacy disorder. So is that something where you're kind of collaborating with speech therapists?
Definitely.
Within your school? Okay.
Yeah. And I feel like as I've worked at this school, you know, my idea of what an SLP did was so different when I worked in the public school system. And now that I work so collaboratively with these other SLPs, I am wondering why in college I didn't get some of the knowledge or the overlap that there is. I mean, it's really powerful what we can do by working together. And like you said, that early language component can be such an indicator. And so many of the strategies that I've learned from these SLPs are helpful in my everyday teaching. So our most severe students with dyslexia often have SLPs as their tutors.
Cool. So. We are all for the collaborative approach. Steph, go ahead. You have a burning question.
Well, this is just kind of touching upon like what your specific role is. Do you use a specific program as your tutoring, or, well, I'm sure it's individualized.
Yeah.
One-on-one, individualized. And then do you use Horton Gillingham or like Linda Mood Bell?
Yeah. So we're all trained in phonographics, which is a speech to print reading program. And then sort of like there's no one size fits all for everybody. We also take things from like Linda Mood Bell's ending grid and just other pieces, but our core sort of training is in phonographics and that kind of just builds and we base things around that.
Awesome.
And all the teachers at our school are trained in it, even math teachers, social studies teachers, which is amazing because then, you know, I teach math too. And so as a math teacher, if we're in fourth grade and we're learning about, you know, new vocabulary, I can show them how to chunk the word just like they would in tutoring.
Now, how does it present itself in math? Like, what do you see the difficulties of a dyslexic child I guess, in that subject area?
So with the students that I've worked with, I've seen some students where math is just their moment to shine, and it's, you know, you see them as a math student and you're like, wow, I don't see anything really, you know, impacting their ability to show their knowledge or demonstrate what they know. But then I also have seen students where, you know, word problems shut down, break down, but then they can do the actual arithmetic and the math. Also back to the planning and the organization, you know, writing and solving equations on a paper can be really hard for some kids, keeping track of where they are, remembering the steps of long division. So just like it can be different for different readers who are dyslexic, kids who struggle in math because of their dyslexia can look so different too.
That's so interesting.
In my opinion.
Oh man, I wish we had like 1,000 hours of podcasting.
So my one math student that I have this year, he's a first grade student and I'm doing second grade math with him. And, you know, but he can't read, you know? So it's just so cool that there's just, we really get to see the different ways that these kids can excel and where their strengths are and help them with what their needs are.
Awesome. Okay, so last question is about resources for parents or educators. Like, what are your go-to resources so that if people want more information on this topic, they can get it?
Well, I have a couple of favorite people that I look to for research and that I've read about and heard from on podcasts. So David Kilpatrick, you know, he is like the guru in reading and phonological awareness. I also love Timothy Shanahan. He has a website that's really full of resources and information about literacy. And then Emily Hanford is amazing at explaining the science of reading and how our brain learns to read and how there can be such a breakdown for our students with dyslexia. So I feel like those are three names that pop in my head right away. And then also there are just tons of podcasts that I found throughout my past few years. There's one called Empower Dyslexia that I really like. And it's cool because they also have a student version sort of where they have a younger person talk about dyslexia and kind of run the podcast. So you're not only getting, you know, an adult's perspective, but you get a younger person's perspective on it as well. Just look for the resources. They're there. There's tons of them.
Awesome. This was really, really informative. I feel like you managed to give us like a little mini course on dyslexia in like 20-25 minutes. This was really, really fantastic. I think it's going to be super helpful information for both parents and educators. And they may not, you know, have all the answers as they walk away, but they'll, you know where to go for resources and extra support with this. So thank you so, so much for all of this awesome information.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm happy to share it.
Have a follow-up.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd love that. And again, like there's just, I feel like as a teacher, you know, I'm just like a lifelong learner. So I'm definitely by no means an expert in this area. I am just along to learn as much as I can and speak out about what we can do to help these students because they're amazing and they deserve everything and anything. So
awesome. Thank you so much, Samantha.
Of course.
Thanks so much for tuning into our episode with Samantha. You may have noticed recently that we have rebranded to the Language Literacy and Play Collective, and more on that soon. We have to re-record our intro, and we'll record a podcast episode in the next month or so, giving you some insights into why we rebranded. We have a lot of really exciting projects coming up, so the best way to follow along is to find us on Instagram @Language Literacy Play Collective. Hope to see you there.